A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Hooray. Yeah, well, I do have an interview tomorrow. So, whatever.
Hey, congrats. Record,
yay!
It is going in because I don't have time to super edit.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with the guys at Obstructed View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, or just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and enjoy talking baseball and, of course, the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Good day, this is Ken. With me are Skip, Jeff, and Adam from Obstructive View. How's everybody doing this fine Sunday evening?
Fantastic.
Doing all right.
I'm walking on 2 feet.
Yeah, that's the normal amount of feet, so I think we're doing great. Yeah. So I think we can talk about this towards the end, but they did just select the field of 68 for both the men's and women's basketball tournament. So that's a lot of fun. I'm sure there's some controversy there. But most people who listen to this thing, like all five of you, came to talk about Cubs baseball. So now that daylight savings time is upon us and we don't have to worry about like springing forward a few hours from now, we can talk about what you guys thought about the Cactus League so far. The spring breakout game finally happened after being rained out last year and on Thursday, but there was a second spring breakout game, so thankfully we got to see some of the Cubs. We had a couple of exhibitions in Tokyo prior to the big games that are coming up after we're done recording later this week, and so we can preview those games after we talk about what we saw in the exhibitions. And yeah, there might not be baseball after 2026, but in the meantime, we do have baseball in 2025 and 2026, and we can see what happens going forward. So how's that for a plan, guys?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
That's a home run plan.
I'm in love with it. Let's do it.
All right.
As the spring gave way to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrows.
Before we get started, though, did you guys see that Joey Gallo is going to be a pitcher?
So I saw that was being said, yeah.
Yeah, I saw the headline, too, but I was like, that doesn't, I'm not sure I read that right, and then I went on to the next thing.
No, it's true. Like, I think he struck out in over half of his at-bats so far this spring. So the White Sox were just like, yeah, we don't want you anymore. And then he decided, okay, I'm announcing on either Twitter or Instagram, I'm converting to pitching. So he's doing the reverse Ankiel, right? Because Ankiel used to be a pitcher, and then he became a really good outfielder. But now Gallo is saying, you know what? I have a really good arm. I guess I'll be a pitcher, because he used to pitch in high school and possibly in the minors. But yeah, that was a big surprise. So what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I was expecting to read some article and hear them say, no, that's Joey Gallo.
Oh. Like
my cousin Vinny, but...
or maybe this is the Tulio Rodriguez situation, since I think the Mariners have two of them.
Tulio Rodriguez.
Or the other Max Muncy who plays for the Sacramento A's.
Do they spell Muncy differently, or is it the same Muncy?
Same name.
Wow. Okay, they're going to have to need like the initial, like Michael Jordan versus Michael B. Jordan, so you know which one's the actor and which one's the greatest of all time. But yeah, anyway, that's happening elsewhere in baseball. Like, lots of pitchers are breaking, so maybe Joey Gallo will be able to get a job. But thankfully, The Cubs have survived spring training mostly intact, and even Nico Hoerner looks like he's starting to swing bats. He's getting ready for the Arizona side. He stayed back in Mesa so that he could get ready for stateside opening day in Phoenix against Diamondbacks later this month. But everybody else pretty much traveled to Japan. But when you're looking at Cactus League, like finally the Cubs did lose a few games. They had all those ties, but I feel like as of this recording, they are either at the top of the Cactus League or very close to the top, because they just rattled off so many wins, and then there were a few ties, and they finally lost a couple of games. But, you know, they ended on a pretty good note, even though they lost, like, the last game prior to traveling to Japan, right? But nobody really cares about the records. The only thing that we care about is that people are healthy, and they generally seem to be getting their work in. So what do you guys think so far? Like, who's your favorite so far in Cactus League? And any surprises, really?
Well, so I have to say that I've been pretty impressed both with Kevin Alcantara and with Gage Workman, who I didn't really have much hope for as a AA Rule 5 guy, but he seems to have really come on to the fact that he's already made the team. So that's pretty impressive for a guy with with his pedigree, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, he made the most of the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead, Adam.
No, same thing. I just second the vote. He's been impressive.
And then I guess the other thing is that, we all expected Matt Shaw to do pretty well, and he has, despite the oblique injury that he started with. But, we've been burned by a lot of high expectations in the past, and at least it feels like, for the first month of spring training, that our expectations are being reasonably well met. And, as longtime Cubs fans, that's a victory in itself, right? So,
and it might be the only one. it very much feels like, life as a Bears fan, when you take winning the offseason if you can get it, because we all know anything can happen once the regular season starts, except for, what we want to happen. So, yeah, right now, good vibes. Gotta enjoy them while they last.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Like, we just want to see games that matter, and thankfully they happen in a couple of days. So we'll either feel really, really great about the Cubs the next time we talk, or we'll feel terrible and the season is lost, et cetera, et cetera. That depends on what happens in this Tokyo series. This actually happens to be the only international series of 2025. I think they canceled everything else, and that kind of sucks, because, usually there's like a Mexico series or some kind of...
I guess they were in London last year.
Yeah, exactly. But Tokyo's got the spotlight, and it's been really huge. Before we go back to Tokyo, though, spring breakout, like last year, that was the first year of spring breakout. The Cubs game got rained out. This year, the Cubs got two. So Kevin Alcantara didn't make the squad to Japan, but he did get featured in spring breakout, so it's like a bunch of other top prospects. That includes Moises Ballesteros, Cade Horton, and so forth. And they all seem to do really, really well in that game. They did, like, basically destroyed the Angels prospects, which I guess doesn't say much, because the Angels have a terrible farm system, but it is what you want to see, right?
Yeah, I only caught the first few innings of that, but it was enough to see Alcantara's home run. So that was good to see.
The other thing that I was impressed with, and I actually really enjoyed, is that they were interviewing some of the players during some of the innings. And so I got to see Moises, an interview with him, interview with Alcantara, one with Triantos. And, Yeah, I thought those guys were all really thoughtful, and also I thought that they hadn't really bought into, the complete set of cliches and platitudes that you get from most major leaguers these days. So it was actually a little more interesting than, when you have an interview with some of the, some of the more established major league players. The other thing, is normally those in-game interviews just irritate the crap out of me because they take away from the game. But considering that the stakes are a little lower in spring training, I actually thought that that was a good place for those. And it was nice to, get a little bit more, sort of know the players a little bit better and see some of their personalities come out.
I think they hadn't all watched Bull Durham yet, so they once they do that, they should get the cliches down. But yeah, like I was actually super impressed with how well Kevin Alcantara spoke English, because obviously he's, I believe, is Dominican, but I could be wrong. But it's not his native language, and he just spoke very eloquently for someone who's definitely not a native speaker. I did catch the Triantos interview. That was really cool. And I believe there was someone else. You said Moises. I missed that one, but I bet that was a lot of fun too. And he got to throw out a base runner. So that was kind of the concern, right? Is can he catch? And the way that he handled the guys who threw to him, and the way he was able to control the running game in that particular instance, that was really a good idea. Although I guess you could say, well, why are they trying to steal in the first place? Is it just because they need to do something in the exhibition, or because they have a scouting report that says Moises has a terrible arm or something? But you've seen him throw people out in like Iowa Cubs games, so it's not like he can't do it. The big thing is like, will the catching catch up, pun intended, to the bat, which is really good. And
So,
he had some hits too. That was fun.
I'll tell you something about Ballesteros. So, also, quite eloquent in English, I thought too. He's from Venezuela, but I saw him for a year, maybe a little longer, down here in Myrtle Beach, and he was actually a very competent catcher in Myrtle Beach when he was here, and I think part of the knock against Ballesteros is he doesn't look like a baseball player. He looks like a softball player, and he's not particularly fast, right? And he's he looks a little pudgy, and people just sort of assume that that body style can't last behind the plate, and who knows if it can or not over the long haul. But as soon as he was promoted to Double A, or I guess to High A, to South Bend, we lost him here at Myrtle Beach. And then we had a couple of other catchers. Ethan Hearn was ahead of him, so it wasn't him. Pablo Aliando was ahead of him, and he came up behind those two guys. And then the guys we've had since then, they had no ability to control the running game whatsoever. And so every game that I saw after Ballesteros left, the opposing team would just run like crazy on the bases, and they would, succeed 90% of the time. And so it was really clear that despite, the scouting that said, oh, Ballesteros might not be able to make it as a catcher, he was definitely controlling the running game, at least in single A down here. So I think some of that concern is a little overblown.
It's fair, and that's really nice to hear. Also, when you talked about body type, I was just thinking of the non-Yadier Molina brothers, like Jose and Benji were fireplugs, and they were some of the better catchers in MLB when they were playing. Like they knew how to catch, so it's not a body type thing. I think it's just what is your baseball IQ and what is your technique? If he has the technique, I think he can be very successful, and he obviously seems like a very good hard worker as well.
Shout out to Hector Villanueva. Represent all the big body catchers out there.
That's
Did
a good
he?
reference, Adam. That totally fits.
Did you guys get a chance to catch the exhibitions? The only game that I got to watch live was actually part of the spring breakout because, the exhibitions were on MLB.TV, but I was blacked out because Chicago, right? And also, I don't have marquee, but if you guys got to see it, or at least the condensed game afterwards, what did you guys think? Are the Hanshin Tigers retroactively the World Series champions, or what?
I know, relegate the White Sox and bring the Tigers into Major League Baseball.
Yeah, yeah. Having two legit teams in Chicago would be nice. They look good. I echo the sentiment of what got expressed from the booth. JD was talking about how the vibe in the stands is just kind of weird. Like when they were pitching, especially when the Cubs were batting, when they're in pitch mode, everybody was quiet, like library quiet. And then when the ball would get struck, that's when anytime the ball got put in play or even, is remotely close to being a fair ball, the reactions were so loud and like, it was like it sounded like British theater or something. Just these great reactions to, a just basic line drive. So the attention being paid to the game, I think, is really high. But yeah, it had almost more of a U.S. Open tennis feel almost, in how quiet it would be, like in between plays. But yeah, I saw that game live against the Tigers, and then I was just watching this replay. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get up to watch those 5 a.m. games this week, but we'll see how it goes.
I'll definitely watch the first one. The second one, I've got like an all day meeting right after the game is supposed to end, so I don't know if I'll get up for that one. But we'll see.
I'm not sure I can do the first one because I got an interview right afterwards, and that would seem extremely irresponsible. But the second one, I don't have anything that day, so I might watch it depending on how I feel. But just a clarification, when they cheer the ball, is it like at Wrigley and other stadiums where any fly ball gets an ooh and an ah, and then it becomes like a warning track flyout? Or are they legit? Like they're just so good or so adept at fan intelligence that they know that this is actually going to go and they won't cheer every single pop fly.
No, I got the sense that the reaction was just, it was a different meaning behind it. That they're paying such close attention to the pitches. And the swing, like there'd be some reaction if it's like a swing and a miss or whatever. It's just like any action is interesting, not, oh, this might be a home run, because I noticed it more when the Cubs were at bat. And so they weren't reacting with this, like, and I'm sure there were some American fans there. So even then, I think the dynamic was probably a little bit different than normal, but, yeah, it's more like just that's the time to react is anytime the ball is put in play, not this feeling of, oh, that might be a home run. Although I would guess, too, it would be a little bit more difficult to gauge since they were using a different ball when the Cubs were up versus the Tigers, that the Cubs hitting the ball that they would normally use in that league, I guess, and the like more of a flight control ball, and the reactions were a little bit different. It's probably a little bit more difficult to gauge how far the ball was going to go in that, in that scenario. But yeah, it wasn't like, oh, we think everything's going to be a home run. It's just, oh, this is where the excitement is when the ball is put in play. My impression, anyway.
So I think the Cubs pitch with their ball, and Team Japan, whether it was the Tigers or the Giants, they pitch with the NPB ball, which is like a deader ball. So
yeah.
That was kind of weird. But I don't think it's a function of the ball. I think it's a function of like the quality of the team, because the Hanshin Tigers actually won the Japan Series in 2023, so they're coming off like 2 seasons off their last championship. So this is a good team, even if it's an exhibition. So you can't like, I guess, knock them or anything. They legitimately are that good, and that's why they, at least part of the reason why they beat both the Cubs and the Giants in exhibition, or I'm sorry, the Dodgers in exhibition. I don't know too much about Yomiuri, the Giants, other than that, like that's where Taka Tanaka came from in the second major league movie that everybody hated. But you know, that's pretty much all I know about the Giants.
They're like the Yankees of MPB, basically.
Oh,
Like they got
really?
the most
Okay.
titles. That's who Sadaharu played for, that kind of stuff.
No, but that was back in the day. I think, like, if you look, go to Wikipedia and just look it up, for something like half of the past decade, it's been Fukuoka. The Hawks have won the Japan
Well,
series. It's pretty
keep in
crazy.
mind, the comparison was the Yankees. So
Oh.
back in the day, the Yankees were good too.
That's true. Okay, that's fair.
Well, I haven't been able to watch any of the exhibition games there because for some reason, Major League MLB TV seems to think that my subscriptions lapsed, and I thought it was good until the new season started. But I guess I'll have to wait for T-Mobile to roll out the offer this year. But so there's an ad for T-Mobile. But I will say though that it is an awful lot of fun to see, games in international locations and how the fans react, because I've been to some Caribbean World Series games and it's a party the entire time. And so it's a much different atmosphere than most American venues when you watch baseball.
Yeah, having like the drums and horns and stuff in the stand, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like you remember the first World Cup when South Africa was in and they brought the vuvuzelas and all that stuff, and
yes.
the first Caribbean World Series game I ever went to, I'm like, what is happening here? And I know the game, I just didn't know the fans, but it was a lot of fun. The kids, I was there with like a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they were into it because there was so much going on in the stands. So.
Yeah,
I hate to be an old, but it used to be, I don't want to say quite that extreme, but going to games at Wrigley before the post 1998 ticketing increase, where it was kind of like the difference between, if you remember what the Chicago was it Chicago Stadium versus United Center was like for the Bulls when they made that switch. When Wrigley Field tickets used to be just dirt cheap, like almost in the 70s and 80s, like in the summer, like people weren't wearing clothes. I mean, like it was the wardrobe of the people in the stands, it was just riffraff, it was like an extension of a beach. Just like if you go to any one of those resort towns around the Gulf of Mexico, you just have like the waiting areas for these restaurants on the coast. Just you can just kind of meander off of the beach and then just go get a table. And it was like that at Wrigley. It's like bathing suits and short shorts, and the guys are wearing like neon green short shorts and no shirts, and just the whole atmosphere is one giant party. But once ticket prices go up to, triple digits, then you just see a completely different clientele and a whole different atmosphere in the ballpark. It's just a much different thing when you're spending $1,000 a year for your season tickets versus when you're spending, you know, I can't even imagine what, you know, the really nice season tickets are costing people. So yeah, it is very cool to see more of a party vibe throughout the stadium.
I wonder if Harry Carey would think that the fans were fun anymore. Because he certainly thought that the bleachers were fun when he was announcing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a friend who her sister worked for the production department. And so the stories of how much fun they were having that you never heard is pretty great. And I wonder if fans would think Harry Carey was fun. Also, like, yeah, interesting question.
I think the first time I really, really paid attention to the Cubs was right after Kerry Wood's 20K game. And then that was also the summer of Sammy. But by then, Harry Carey had died, so I didn't get to see him live. But I see a lot of the, you know, the memories and the YouTube videos, and he just seemed like a really fun drunk uncle kind of guy. So I can see how a lot of people would have loved him.
The good old and bad old days.
Yeah, I'd say that's, you know, fairly accurate, Ken. I mean, I remember watching him. Well, I guess I started watching the Cubs, you know, on cable when I was at my grandparents before he was even there, and Jack Brickhouse was announcing and things, which makes me sound like I'm, you know, 85 years old now, but I'm not. But
that's pretty old.
I mean, I was a little kid when Jack Brickhouse was announcing. Yeah. But you know, Harry Carey was definitely, you know, a man of the people on that side. And I think that's why a lot of people liked him. I think people would still like him. I just think he might find some of the crowd a little less interesting as he used to. And I'm not sure that he would think that the, you know, the fairly buttoned up Ricketts family would be all that exciting either. But, you know, I mean, who knows? Obviously, he'd get along with them if they were paying his salary. But
So you guys know, of course, Tuesday and Wednesday morning for us, evening for them in Japan, the Cubs and Dodgers will be playing. I think it's very interesting how, like, you know, when they had the London series, one of the games was more catered towards like London local time, and the other game was more for American time. But both of these games are basically 7 p.m. In Tokyo time. And I think that's done for a reason, because this game isn't really for us as Americans. It's for the globalization of the sport and to engage fans over there. But that's a totally different matter. They actually matter. Like, these games do count in the standings. So by the time they come back in Arizona, there will only be 160 games left instead of 162. So the Cubs could be anywhere from 2-0 to 0-2. And my hope is that they at least split the series. But you can see, like, scenarios where the Cubs sweep, the Dodgers sweep, they split, you know, a monsoon hits Japan, Godzilla, like, blows up a nuclear power plant or something. who knows, right? But there are any number of things that can happen, because this is just so weird in the schedule. Like, the starters aren't completely built up yet. There are piggyback scenarios. They've brought extra pitchers, and there's like a traveling taxi squad and so forth. I guess that's a whole really long-winded way of saying I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm very excited to find out what will happen.
I'm a little bummed that this ate up, or the Cubs are the home team for this series, so it ate up, you know, their home series, I guess, for the Dodgers. Would have been really nice not to have to go to L.A. This season, but they're going to have to head there later this year.
No,
yeah, they only have to do it once. It's really goofy, right? Because when they come back, they'll start in Arizona, then they'll go to the Athletics in Sacramento, then they'll go back home, and then they're flying back out west for one of their only West Coast trips of the year. Like, they don't go back to the West Coast until August or something, right? So these, like, going to the West Coast trips, they don't happen as often as in the past because of, like, the way the schedule set up and, you know, interleague and whatnot. So I think it's actually super favorable to the Cubs. So I'm not worried about the travel. I'm worried about, like, how they're going to amass enough wins in April to keep themselves in contention so that they can get to the trade deadline and actually add more, you know? But before we get there, we do need to have the Cubs win at least one of these two games in Tokyo. So I think we know for sure that Yamamoto and Shota will start the first game, and then Steele and Roki Sasaki, who should have been a Cub, but he's a coward, start the second game, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the seasoning of the entire roster plays out. I mean, it's two games, so there really won't be a whole lot to read into. I get the sense from the way they've talked about it that it's going to be like a modified bullpen game, or like a starting rotation game, where we're going to see a lot of pitchers in both games. And both teams are, I don't know, what do you call this, like two-thirds of the way through spring training that this game comes up, and they're both dealing with, you know, having flown halfway across the world, around the world, to arrive at this point. So not really expecting either team to be anywhere close to, like, clicking on all cylinders. So to me, it's like an exhibition feel with regular season ramifications, but it's still, it's kind of nice that it's only two games, you know. So even if they're 0-2, it's still like the equivalent of losing a three game series. You know, you don't even have that. It doesn't come across like a sweep. It doesn't show up in the standings like a sweep. It's just two losses, if that's what happens. From what I hear, Mookie Betts is under the weather and may not actually play in either game. So they're down to only 11 superstars.
Yeah, such a shame.
The Dodgers are. Yeah, so who knows if they'll even be able to field the team. I don't know.
Yeah. Who's so, playing shortstop if Mookie doesn't play? Do you guys remember? Is it Kike who
I think plays it's, shortstop? I think it's, I want to say Rojas.
Okay.
They have another shortstop on the roster. I think they just
I didn't know
were concerned just... that he couldn't stay healthy for 162 games was part of the reason they switched.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure if, like, Tommy Edman would come back into the infield to play in the absence of Mookie Betts, because that's the only other guy that I think of. I don't even know if they have Gavin Lux anymore. I think he got traded.
Yeah, he's on the Reds now.
Yeah, because I think everybody hated Gavin Lux and the Dodgers fan base. So I guess they wouldn't care. But based on that, like, I guess they have a pretty good defense, but I feel like the Cubs are better. So if they can just keep getting balls on the ground, they should be okay. Yeah. I'm looking at the roster, you know, like Matt Shaw hasn't been added yet. So, you know, stateside, Keegan Thompson was the last man out of the pitching staff. So he's probably going to get DFA'd or traded beforehand to get Shaw on the roster. I think they actually brought Brad Keller as well. So that you guys remember, there were two people on the 31-man travel roster that don't have to be on the 40-man. Brad Keller is one of them. So that's depth. right? But I feel like they're just not going to pitch him, and they're going to keep him as kind of like insurance in case someone else, like basically five relievers have to get hurt before they have to add Brad Keller to the roster, I think is how it works. But the big DFA that has to happen is to get Shaw on the roster, because based on the two exhibitions that we've seen, he's going to start at third base, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they're not going to keep Keegan, despite the fact that, you know, he's been, you know, he has promise, but he's, you know, they have so many guys that are out of options at this point. It sounds to me like they're going to put Keller on the roster at some point. It may not be in Japan, but you know, so he might take an injury spot or something, but it seems to me like by the beginning of the season, he's going to be on the roster. You know, what they could do, although I doubt they'll do it, is they could option Nico to the minors, because he still has options left, but only with his permission, because he's only 5 years. He's just over 5 years of service time. So I doubt that'll happen, but that would be a simple way to solve things for 2 weeks. But like I said, you know, I doubt that's actually the way things will happen.
I think they're actually going to probably try to sneak Bruhan, Vidal Bruhan, through waivers and get him optioned to Iowa at the end of the spring when everybody's rosters are full. Because I feel like they want to keep Gage Workman. You guys mentioned Mookie earlier. The Dodgers beat just said that Dave Roberts has confirmed Mookie Betts won't be playing in the Tokyo series and will be possibly flying back to LA early so that he can recover.
Hmm.
But
breaking news here on the podcast. Yeah, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, I am sad because I like Mookie Betts, but I am also happy because the Cubs won't have to face Mookie Betts. So, you know, cognitive dissonance.
He should get his
there.
Rest. That's what's important.
Yeah. But, yeah, there, you know, there's that list of 31. You know for sure that Reese McGuire isn't making the team, and who knows if he'll actually stay in Iowa as the depth catcher behind Moises Ballesteros. I do agree that Brad Keller, as one of the tread additions, is going to make the roster at the expense of one of like the lower tier of pitchers on the roster. That includes like Caleb Killian and possibly like Ethan Roberts. But yeah, there are a few guys who are optionable, so they could do that towards the end. I think that includes Eli Morgan and Nate Pearson. Ben Brown is also optionable, but they decided. I think like there are some reports that suggest that he is the sneaky pick to be the fifth rotation guy when they start the season behind Shota, Tyone, Steele, and Boyd, right? And I guess that means Colin Ray is going to be like your swing starter or like a long relief guy. So that's really cool to have all this depth. You just can't keep all of it.
My guess is that Cody Petit or Poteet or however you say his name ends up being you know, cut. I think he's out of options, and in that case it'll come down to a strict salary dump on the Cody Bellinger trade to the Yankees. So, which is, you know, exactly what I've been saying since December. You know, the Cubs still haven't spent that money, so I'm just gonna lay that out here again for every time I show up on the OV podcast that I'm still irritated with the Ricketts for dumping Bellinger for nothing.
But how well, much would actually it change your mind if they use that money to pick up a Lance Lynn?
Not one bit.
No, they should probably not even sign Lance Lynn, but there are ways around that too. I just wanted to, well, actually, because Poteet does have two options remaining for Arizona Phil, he was optioned to the minors as part of the cuts, so he's taken care of. Like, they'll keep him for now.
But all right,
you do have a point. Like, they should spend that money. They did spend on Justin Turner, which we all liked.
Yeah, that's
as
true.
Far as I know, they may repurpose some of it to like take on, like, let's say the Marlins decided to trade Sandy Alcantara. They might use that to take on his contract, right? At the trade deadline, we'll see. Or Dylan Cease,
right?
Yeah. He's not making
million,
nothing.
Maybe?
It's a double figure or a double digit millions contract each
but
year.
Like under market for what what he delivers as a starter.
Well, of course it's the Marlins, but you know, it's not insubstantial money, but it is affordable. And based on what they saved with the Cody Bellinger trade, they should be able to absorb it, or a Dylan Cease or a Michael King or, you know, whoever else might be on the market. Like, you know, they'd have to compete with all the other teams that have broken pitchers.
Based on the fact that they're six months away from not having to pay taxes ever again, I think they can go ahead and spend the money. Don't get me started.
Well, I was thinking earlier that the reason that Japan is our only international series of baseball is maybe because that's the last country that we have left as a friend. So, but the just to go back though. I mean, if they repurpose some of the money to extend Justin Steele or PCA or, you know, somebody else, then, you know, I could be, you know, a little more forgiving. But that hasn't happened
yet.
Just
keep Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, right. Or that. But there's been no extension talks there, right? So,
Yeah, PCA, you bringing up PCA, he could... If his power comes in, like it's obviously still spring training, but for the sake of argument, if he starts hitting with the kind of power he's shown in the spring, he is contractually going to be problematic. So mm-hmm. like if he turns into like Bobby Witt level combination of power, speed, and defensive value, extending him early is going to be a very beneficial move for the Cubs.
I think it's a no-brainer right now. I think it's a no-brainer right now. Yep. So
yeah, they might broach the subject. He has money because he got a pretty good signing bonus, and you know his parents are. They're not like Hollywood elite, but they have successful acting careers, right? So it's not like he's hurting for money. So there's that too. But if I were the Cubs, yeah, definitely talk to him about it and just lock in the money as much as you can.
If you were going to do some crazy, crazy extension now, I'd say... Yeah, I would say, depending on the numbers, but if you try to extend it now, you'd most likely, worst case scenario, get your money's worth. But potentially, get enormous value out of that contract. But yeah, he's probably not feeling any pressure to get that deal done, but I'd like to see it wrapped up. As opposed to however far down the line it is when he would actually become a free agent. If he is that well-rounded player, he could be making some serious bank. And he's still what is he like 16?
That's my read. 23, but I might be 23. Year or two too old. He's either 22 or 23. He like barely was able to drink last year, right? I don't even know. He's a baby.
He still has that that look of like
he's 23.
He will turn 23, right? Or he yeah. has turned 23.
It's just, no, it's just because he's spending time like... around Craig Council, who now finally looks like he's 28 instead of looking like he was 18 for
no, he turns 20
straight years.
Wow. Okay. Okay, he's 2 years away from being able to rent a car, even though he just buy his own.
He's younger than Matt Shaw.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. Got ourselves a youth movement going on here. And that's really exciting. I enjoyed that. I feel like next time, if you guys are up to it, because the Cubs will play in Arizona, like for real. This is the regular season. Cactus League is over on the 27th of March. We have one Sunday before then to do like a quick season preview after the series. So I feel like we could talk about that then and maybe talk a little bit about like, basically, the feeling is baseball's going to walk out after 2026 season is done because, you know, MLB and the MLBPA are just like basically at a crossroads. There's
at this point, I'm not prepared to talk about civilized society in general beyond 2025. So
yeah, my horizon is pretty short.
So maybe we should bump that to the offseason. We should at least talk about the Arizona series after we find out what happens in Japan. But in the meantime, like there will be a tournament going on that will be of some import. Who do you get winning this year's college basketball championship for the men's side? The women's side, it's usually the top seed, but you know, there are some upsets. I think the women's bracket has a lot less parity than the men's because their programs are so top heavy, but the men's like just absolute chaos every single year. And I imagine there is always a chance for a 16-1 upset. Like the two that has happened over the past decade, but it might not be as likely this year. But I did pick Duke to win just kind of out of obligation because I did go there, and they are the top ranked team, even though they're not the top overall seed.
I know I paid less attention to college basketball than you did this year, but I know even if I pick someone, it wouldn't matter because as soon as the tournament starts, I root for the lower seed in every game other than when Wisconsin's playing, and even then, I'm kind of like just want them to put me out of my misery and just lose early.
You're not going to root for New Mexico all the way, Jeff?
Oh, no.
Okay. I think I picked New Mexico to upset somebody.
I think they're a 10 seed. Marquette.
Yeah, I picked them to upset Marquette in the first round, and then it was just like that. That's all you get to do. You know, there's got to be at least one 5-12 upset and one, you know, 15-2 upset.
So I'm going to pick Michigan State. You know, again, for the homer reason. And then I'm going to say that VCU is going to be the Cinderella team that'll, you know, surprise people for a while in the tournament.
I have no idea. Like, even less of an idea. Once the conferences merged into, like, Voltron, I really can't make sense of college sports in general, particularly college basketball. So if I have to pick, I'll go ahead and say that Gonzaga is going to win it all, despite not being as good as all the other teams.
Assuming they're in the tournament.
They are in the tournament. So they could be Cinderella again. Like, yeah.
I was scrolling through the brackets, and I went with the team that showed up when I got to that point in my sentence.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you're a spy and you have to make up a name and you have to like look all over. Like that scene in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, right? It's
Oh,
like,
yes.
oh, you, I see your bike. It's at the Alamo.
I was in a barbershop quartet, Skokie, Illinois. There was this
Yes.
guy. He was fat, orca fat.
Yeah, it's a single elimination tournament, so just stupid crap always happens, especially if someone gets hurt. Like they say Cooper Flagg is supposed to come back from Duke, and I really only started watching college basketball this year for the conference tournaments, and Duke almost like blew a 20-something point lead against UNC, and it's just basically typical Duke. They pissed me off for like the past 15 years. But anyway, yeah, it should be a lot of fun, and I doubt any work is going to get done on Thursday and Friday. So I hope you guys have fun with that. And then maybe, on Sunday after the Sweet 16 is set, we can get back together and preview the baseball games that matter to us. But in the meantime, thank you guys for joining me today. You can find us all at obstructiveview.net. And this podcast is, of course, an Apple Podcast rate and review if you must. And, we have Rich Deanna to thank for our theme song and Randall Sanders for pulling the final out call from the 2016 World Series, which the Cubs won and people forget. Any last words, gentlemen?
I'll just pick one last comment on the marquee broadcast is that I'm rapidly approaching Adam with Zach Zaidman territory with Alex Cohen, the new backup guy for Boog, who I just cannot stand. I hope Boog's going to be there for the actual games. Now, I'm not a huge Boog fan either, so that says a lot.
You
Yeah,
might be in the minority. Alex Cohen is pretty well regarded, but maybe it's just, different strokes for different folks.
he just feels like knockoff Len Casper to me.
I think when he was a little bit awestruck and maybe had a little bit of beginner's mind about him, just approaching with awe the idea of like calling actual Cubs games on live national TV. It seemed like he had a little bit more, I don't know, brought a little bit more character, personality, and wonder to the game that was kind of refreshing for that first, I don't know, 5 innings or whatever. But yeah, now that he's settled in and gotten comfortable, he just, yeah, it seems a little cheesy, a little processed. Yeah. Needs to work on his game overall. I think he's got potential, but yeah, just a little bit too yeah, B team sports talk radio morning host, just yeah, not loving it.
I'd rather he was just bad, so at least he would like have some character. Like when who is it? Spiegel fills in for Pat sometimes on the radio,
Oh
and like he's
yeah.
not very good, but it's different enough that I'm like, oh,
Yeah,
this is at
yeah,
least this is different,
yeah. Because he, the
He
thing is,
probably
he's
just needs
polished.
reps. Yeah.
Like he is polished. He knows what he's doing in the mechanism of it all. It's in allowing the personality to come out in a way that isn't forced and manufactured. I think that's kind of the zone he's in right now.
It's a little ironic that those of us from the OV podcast are criticizing
Home Duck podcast
I'm
nobody
also
listened to.
crossing my fingers that we don't have any further Taylor McGregor cultural exchange segments as well, because those were a little cringeworthy in the first game.
We were Elise. Elise is awesome. Elise Mackaire
Oh,
is
Elise's
really
best,
good.
yeah.
Yeah.
She
But
is
I would
really good.
posit that anybody on the marquee crew is better than Zach Zaidman. So count your blessings.
Yeah.
Cole, what's his name, is pretty marginal. You like the studio host guy.
Cole Wright, is that it?
No, I think
Right.
he's trying too hard to be edgy. I think he could be good. He just needs to like take some of the edge off. But
Yeah.
they they got a new producer. Like at some point they have to figure it out because, you know, this needs to make some money for the Cubs. Otherwise it's pointless. Just give it back to MLB and take the revenue share. But you need Marquee to work so that the Cubs can act like actual big market people. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was pretty cheap of them to not send the radio people out to Japan.
I kind of wonder if that the more that I was thinking about it, I wonder if that's a contractual thing where they couldn't force them to do it. Like if it was their, like if Pat's not going, if that is his call because he needs that time, you know, that off time to where he's not making a quick trip to Japan just to call a game.
They seem to really enjoy the trip with Santa, 25 years ago? So we still tell tons of stories about that.
But Pat is like almost 80, right? So
he's not that old.
It's rough for a guy who's getting up there in years. I get it though, you know. But I don't actually know if I can turn on the radio because my wife's going to be asleep, but I might sneak over the TV and see if I can get the Fox broadcast if Marquee hasn't blacked out the Fox.
Pat is a very nice 69 years old.
Oh, good. Okay, my bad, Pat. Sorry.
Yeah. I will say in deference to and in acknowledgement of Skip's comment about like who are we to criticize these guys, I'll reinforce that my statement that Alex Cohen is polished. Like he has the mechanics down much better. Like Zach Zaidman he's not a play-by-play guy. Spiegs, not a play-by-play guy. He doesn't know what he's doing, and that's the part of the craft that he's not there. I think he has more of a mind to like how you manage the vibes and how you control the feel of the booth. But if you don't have the mechanics of how you call a game, you can't do it. Cohen, he's got it down. He can call a game very, very well on the play-by-play part of it. And I think he has the potential to be good. And throw in one more caveat, calling spring training games is a tough task because it is not exciting baseball. You know, most of the players from most of the time have the numbers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s on their jerseys. So you're being asked to do a lot. But that said, I think he's probably one of the things he's fallen prey to is trying to do too much of not just treating it like a spring training game that doesn't need to be that exciting. Like you can just let, you can just be quiet for a while. It's okay. No one's complaining.
Or let JD talk for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So Ken, you asked for last words 10 minutes ago, and I'll just say to change the topic a little bit. Although I do think this sort of fits with us being the most discredited. What was it we used to say? We were the most discredited Cubs blog or something, but anyway,
I think we were the 78th best Cubs blog.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
it's actually pretty good considering there are like 20,000 Cubs blogs out there, but
that's right.
Posted for a while, you lose momentum. That's it. You know, you got to gain it all back, and that's really tough in this current climate. So, definitely appreciate everybody, like all five or six of you who actually listen to this thing, and you know, we'll just keep it going and see what happens. So thanks, Adam, for hosting this again. And thanks to you guys for hanging out. And go Cubs.
Go Cubs.
Go Cubs. I wish I could say that in Japanese.
I think the theme of this week will be Go Coffee.
Yes.
Bonsai.
It was more than just a game. Thank you.
my God, did I? No, I did. I did actually record. Okay. Now I just gotta like stop recording. Anyway.
So like I say, that never happened in the first iteration of this podcast.
Okay.
It was more than just a game.